Hello, I'm Lisa Cowley, Chief Executive at Beacon. This week's edition of the Black Country Talking News is for Wednesday, the 26th of August, 2020.
Welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sightless charity Beacon Centre. I'm Simon. We are pleased to inform you that our Talking News service is now once again available in CD format. And to those who have received their CD in the post, you'll notice they're in paper envelopes, not the usual plastic wallets, so there's no need to send anything back. Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Online by visiting Beacon's website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/on-air/podcasts. On Spotify and Apple Podcasts, simply search Beacon Black Country Talking News and hit the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading this week, we have Christine, Mina, Ian, Helen, Flashback Roger, Angela, Pete, Sharon, and of course me, Simon. Including this week is our weekly quiz. We look at this week in history in our flashback section. We hear from Sharon about her experience of glaucoma. News from the Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, poetry from Flashback Roger, the weather for the weekend and next week, an update from Beacon, a roundup of local news, plus a music quiz at the end. Now, that music quiz last week, I must admit, I struggled. What about you, Pete?
I knew one of them straight away, Simon. I had to think about another one, but I got there, but I didn't know the third one. So let's run through them. So question number one. What question did Elvis Presley ask on his first number one of 1961? Well, the answer was, are you lonesome tonight? Ah, you see, you knew that one, didn't you? Question number two, what kind of land gave the Shadows a number one in March 1962? The answer was a wonderful land. And finally, question three, what kind of holiday was Cliff Richard on according to his number one from 1963? It was a summer holiday. But you knew that one too, didn't you? We have another music quiz coming up. Thank you to Andy Coulson for sending in the questions. That quiz coming up right at the end of this week's Black Country Talking News. But it's back to you, Simon.
We're all going on a summer holiday, if only. Oh well, let's start off with the local news now with Ian and Angela, but first up, it's Christine.
Coronavirus cases in Wolverhampton have gone up. Residents have said the rise should act as a warning. The latest figures for Wolverhampton show an average of 16.03 cases per 100,000 people in the area over 7 days up to August the 17th. The average was up from 14.04 cases per 100,000 people the week before, and Wolverhampton Council Director of Public Health, John Denley, said the increase should act as a warning about the virus. He said, "The increase in cases in Wolverhampton should act as a warning to us all that COVID-19 remains prevalent in the city and can quickly and easily spread from one person to another. Clearly, as more of the country opens up and we're able to do more of the things we used to do, the risk of transmission increases. What is particularly noticeable is how easy it is for the virus to spread from household to household, which is the primary cause of the increase in cases in Wolverhampton. That's why it's really important that we all continue to follow the social distancing guidance when we meet up with people who are not members of our own household or bubble. We should also ensure we wear face coverings in enclosed spaces and we regularly wash our hands for at least 20 seconds. In particular, people need to stay home if they or any of their household has symptoms of COVID-19 and book a test as soon as possible. By doing all this, you will be protecting yourself, your family and the wider community and helping us to avoid a local lockdown." For more information around Wolverhampton Council's response to coronavirus, go to wolverhampton.gov.uk dudleyborough.uk/coronavirus.
Residents of Dudley Borough are being asked to play their part to avoid a local lockdown. Despite confirmed cases reducing in Dudley since the peak in March, the council is reminding residents to continue to do their bit to control the virus. Actions to prevent the spread include washing hands regularly, keeping a safe distance from others, ideally 2 metres, limiting contact with other people and wearing face coverings. Dudley Council is also reminding residents to be vigilant about the symptoms. A new persistent cough or fever or a loss of taste or smell. Anyone showing signs of the virus should stay at home and self-quarantine within their household. People can book a test for COVID-19 through the NHS website or by calling 119. The latest rates of infection in the region, based on the average number of new cases per 100,000 people for the 7 days to August the 14th, in Dudley are 4 per 100,000, with 13 new cases.
A number of patients waiting more than 18 weeks for routine treatment at hospitals across the Black Country and Staffordshire soared to a record high in June, new figures reveal. Healthcare experts warned the body blow inflicted to the NHS services by the COVID-19 pandemic means patients could face long waits for months or even years to come. Patients referred to for non-urgent, consultant-led elective care could start treatment within 18 weeks, according to NHS rules. But now, new data from the health service shows 65,700 patients on a waiting list for elective operations or treatment at hospitals across the Black Country and Staffordshire at the end of June had been waiting longer, with 45% of patients on the waiting list longer than 18 weeks in June this year, compared to only 12% in June 2019.
Colleges in the Black Country will get millions of pounds to upgrade dated buildings and facilities. The huge cash injection is part of a national programme announced by Education Secretary Gavin Williamson and will provide colleges with vital funds to revamp campuses. Dudley College will get £2 million, Walsall and Sandwell Colleges £1.6 million each, Hales Owen College £1 million, while Wolverhampton College will get £977,000. The cash is to be released as part of the government's drive to improve education facilities across the country. More than £1.5 billion is being pumped into further education, and work to upgrade 180 colleges is set to begin from September. The announcement was hailed by West Midlands Mayor Andy Street, who said the boost would help the region bounce back from the coronavirus pandemic. Exact details of what the cash will be spent on have not been provided. Wolverhampton Council is currently in the process of trying to secure funding for a city centre learning quarter, which will become the new home of its college. Dudley College has also undergone rapid expansion over the last decade.
Regulators are considering whether to launch an investigation into the £780 million merger between the UK brewing arms of Carlsberg and Wolverhampton-based Marston's. The Competition and Markets Authority said it would establish whether the deal announced in June could reduce competition in the UK, although it emphasised that no decision has been made. The Campaign for Real Ale has called for an investigation of the merger, saying it would reduce the choice of beers available to pubgoers. The move makes attempts by Carlsberg and Marston's to seal the deal by the end of September unlikely. CMA officials said in a statement, "The Competition and Markets Authority is considering whether it is or may be the case that this transaction, if carried into effect, will result in the creation of a relevant merger situation under the merger provisions of the Enterprise Act 2002, and if so, whether the creation of that situation may be expected to result in a substantial lessening of competition within any market or markets in the United Kingdom for goods or services."
There's more local news coming up shortly, but now let's hear what's happening at Beacon with Helen.
Welcome to another weekly update about what's been going on at Beacon. It's been a busy week once again at the charity, as our Five of Fortnight campaign is now in full swing, and we'd like to say a big thank you to everyone who's joined in so far. Whether you've signed up to our virtual balloon race, put your pet forward for Beacon's Pet of the Year competition, text donated £5, or added to our virtual collection box, your contribution really will make a difference. If everyone in our local community was to donate just £5 once, we would raise £1.3 million, enough to keep Beacon running for another year. As you know, the COVID-19 pandemic has hit us and our members hard. We need your help more than ever so that we're able to continue supporting people with sight loss in your community. If you want to get involved, there's still time. Here's a quick reminder of how you can. You can sign up to our virtual balloon race. You can pick and personalise your own balloon for £5 each. The race sets off on August the 31st. The owner of a balloon to travel the furthest will win a family goodie box. Head to www.balloonrace.com/beacon to sign up. That's www.balloonrace.com/beacon to sign up. You can also enter our Pet of the Year competition. Just £5 per entry, and all you have to do is send us a photograph and tell us in less than 500 words why your pet should win. Head to www.justgiving.com/campaign/beacon pet of the year. That's www.justgiving.com/campaign/beacon pet of the year. As we're unable to get out and about with our collection boxes, we've also created an online version that comes straight to you. What do you normally spend £5 on? Why not donate it to Beacon and make a real difference? Add your fiver to our collection box via www.justgiving.com/campaign/beacon virtual collection box. One of the quickest and easiest ways to donate £5 is by texting Save Beacon to 70085. Text costs £5 plus one standard rate message. You'll be opting in to hear more about our work in fundraising. But if you'd like to give £5 but do not wish to receive marketing communications, text Save Beacon No Info to 70085. All donations made via Text Donate and our virtual collection box during Fiver Fortnight will be entered into a prize draw to win a luxury fruit and veg hamper courtesy of One Born based Taylor's Greengrocers and Florists. You can find the full terms and conditions on our website. Thank you for your support. Now, in other news, four of our shops are open. As you know, Sedgley, Wolverhampton Clearance Centre, Penkridge and Blockswich. The Beacon team have loved welcoming our customers back, and we're so thankful for all the good quality donations we've received as well. However, we've been inundated with items in recent weeks, so we need to ask if you'd like to donate an item to one of our shops, please ring in advance to check if we've got the space to store it. Don't forget, we also need you to bring our items into our stores when they're open, as goods left outside cause a hazard, and we can't accept them if they don't know that they have come from a COVID-19 symptom-free home. You can call our stores to check about a donation via 01902 880 111. Now, finishing off this week, we'd like to say a big thank you to our friends at Visionary, Amazon and RNIB, through whom some of our members were able to receive an Amazon Fire tablet to help them connect with the world digitally during the pandemic. One of the recipients was Jason. He's previously had help from the Beacon Centre to improve his digital skills and says he loves his new tablet and is making very good use of it. He's been able to check up on the news and weather and listen to his music, install apps and watch films with audio description. We're so glad it's been keeping you entertained, Jason. If you're living with sight loss and think you would benefit from tech support and employment advice, why not get in touch? Ring 01902 880 111. That's it for this week. See you again soon.
Listen out for those contact details coming up at the end of this week's edition. Time for some more local news now with Angela.
Money seized from criminals will be used to support those hit hardest by the effects of the coronavirus pandemic. A A total of $170,000 is being made available over the next 6 months, with the funds distributed to volunteers helping those most in need. The cash has been seized from criminals by the West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner under the Proceeds of Crime Act. The money will now be used to target organisations that offer support to people whose lives have been made harder by COVID-19. The initiative is designed to help the vulnerable, homeless and the elderly, who have all become extremely isolated, with many shielding from the virus. 19 areas which have been identified as being places of high deprivation will be prioritised as grants of up to $5,000 per applicant are rolled out. The new grant follows the $200,000 that the Commissioner has already been made available in May.
Reworked plans for a major housing development on part of the former Wolverhampton Tyre Factory site have been given approval. Persimmon Homes will build 11 new homes at the clock tower on the old Goodyear factory. These houses will be built in place of an apartment block that was due to incorporate the historic tower, the only feature of the factory remaining, which has been given blue plaque status by Wolverhampton's Civic and Historical Society. It means there will be a total of 118 properties in this development phase, 8 less than the original 126 planned, while the clock tower will stand alone. Huge developments have already taken place across the whole Goodyear site since 2007, including the construction of hundreds of houses, an Aldi supermarket and a pub. The clock tower houses will be a mixture of 2, 3 and 4 bedroom homes, and work to lay the foundations for them started last year. In the plans, the developer said the area will be pedestrian focused and feature a community pocket park with benches and planting provided. Work is also ongoing to refurbish the clock tower and repair the roof and external deck to ensure it is safe and secure.
Houses are selling faster in the West Midlands than anywhere in England outside Greater London. The region has also seen asking prices rise at the fastest rate in the UK in the last year, and is proving to be one of the driving forces of the UK market since lockdown. It comes as Rightmove says the UK has seen its busiest month for sales in a decade, up 20% on the previous high to more than 37 billion. As sellers focused on property rather than holidays after the housing market got back on track. Over the last 12 months, the region's house prices are up 6.3% to a record 243,260, and between July and last month, the rise was 1.4%. Scotland saw houses selling quickest at 53 days, while the average time for a house to sell in the West Midlands stands at 58 days, just one day behind Greater London. Stourbridge has seen one of the most expensive residential property sales in the West Midlands in the last year. A house in Racecourse Lane, Stourbridge, sold for £1,475,000, and the DY8 postcode area within which it falls has seen one of the highest average sale prices in the West Midlands. The record levels of buyer activity have led to processing delays, and it means that patience is required to get sales agreed to completion. Across Britain, the average asking price on a home in August now stands at £319,497,000, edging down slightly by 0.2%, or £768, from £320,265 in July, which had been a record high.
The closure of the town's Pizza Express is very disappointing news, a councillor has said. The Stourbridge restaurant is one of 73 across the UK set to close, which also includes the Maryhill Shopping Centre restaurant. Councillor Steve Clark for the Wollaston and Stourbridge Town Ward said, "From a personal point of view, I'm absolutely gutted because I use it all the time. But also in terms of having quality facilities within Stourbridge, it's very disappointing news. The people there are part of the community. When there are problems in the area, we all get together. It will be greatly missed." Pizza Express said that although the majority of its restaurants were profitable before lockdown was imposed, earnings have been declining across the Pizza Express estate for the last 3 years. It added that the reduction in revenue caused by the enforced closure of all restaurants, the cost of reopening and the UK's uncertain economy future, Menteith's rental costs were no longer sustainable.
The outside of the Merryhill shopping centre is undergoing a multi-million pound makeover. The revamp is due to be completed in the spring of 2021. The project will cost more than £10 million and will see the centre's external walls and entrances revamped after the refurbishment of the centre's car parks and bus station over the last few years. Local contractor MAC is carrying out the development work, which will replace cladding, remodel entrances and use energy-saving LED lighting that changes the colour of the walls on the outside of the centre. It comes weeks after it was announced the shopping centre's owner, Into Properties, fell into administration. However, the company said its shopping centres will continue to trade for the time being, despite its insolvency. The popular shopping centre has benefited from investment from some fashion brands, independent retailers and eateries in the past 12 months, including the arrival of luxury retailer Flannels and women's fashion brand Apricot, who opened their doors last month. A total of 93% of stores have now reopened since lockdown restrictions were relaxed, and with restaurants also open, bosses have said footfall continues to increase at the centre.
There's two more local news roundups coming shortly, but now it's that time of the week again, our weekly quiz with Mina. And it's a time that certainly gets you thinking, isn't it?
It does, Simon. So, let's have a look at this week in history with some questions to get you thinking. As always, the answers are coming up with Roger in our flashback section. Are you ready? Here we go. Question one. What shape of handkerchiefs were the favourite of Marie Antoinette? Question two. In what year was it published that there were wonderful animals living on the moon? Question three. In 1986, a lake in Cameroon released tons of carbon dioxide. What was the name of that lake? Question four. How long did the shortest war on record last? Question five. In what year was the Guinness Book of Records first published? And finally, question six. Where in Liverpool can you see the headstone of Eleanor Rigby's whose namesake was made famous by the Beatles? Roger will be along shortly with the answers, but if you miss them, we'll go through all the answers at the end of this week's edition. Good luck!
Now remember, the answers will be revealed with Roger in our flashback section a little bit later on, so listen out for that. But in the meantime, let's return to local news now with Ian.
Pubs and restaurants have been warned they must follow measures to help prevent the spread of coronavirus. There have been numerous reports of customers not being asked for their details as they enter pubs, causing concern among officials. Council chiefs in Wolverhampton have told pubs, bars and restaurants they must follow the rules put in place since reopening on July the 4th, which include taking all customers' details so they can be contacted in the event of an outbreak, and ensuring customers only socialise in groups of up to two households indoors. Venues have been closed down in other parts of the country after being linked to a COVID-19 outbreak. Managers have also been warned that any business found to be operating dangerously could be shut down.
Housing Association Middle Heart has been granted permission for 132 new homes on a site of a former Briley Hill metalworks. The affordable development will breathe new life back into the Stokes Forging site on Cochrane Road with a range of homes including one-bedroom apartments and four-bedroom houses. The development is the latest in the partnership between a housing association and developers Countryside, which will develop 1,000 new affordable homes across the Midlands. Work on the site has already begun with the demolition of the old factory, and the home should be ready for people to move into by next summer. The site, previously a hammer forging plant, closed in September 2019 and the land was quickly acquired for redevelopment. plans for the site have been scaled back from an original application lodged in January, which proposed 141 new homes. The new community will include 2, 3, and 4-bedroom houses, 2-bedroom bungalows, and 1-bedroom apartments, with a mix of affordable rent and shared ownership options available.
A victory has been declared against unauthorised traveller encampments in Dudley. Council leader Patrick Harley said the removal of concrete bollards from the park in Cot Lane, King Swynford, is a symbol of the authority's triumph. Councillor Harley was present at the removal of the bollards, which were installed at several parks and green spaces in 2018 following a series of encampments in the borough. Dudley Council bosses confirmed last week it now has tougher new powers to deal with unauthorised traveller encampments. Under the new rules, travellers arriving in the borough will be directed to the fully operational temporary transit traveller site on Budden Road in Coseley. If they refuse and set up illegal encampments, the police and Dudley Council officers can move them on quicker than before, enabling the council to begin removal of the concrete blocks from parks and green spaces. Sandwell has a similar site in place, and Wolverhampton and Walsall are also looking at potential sites.
University leaders have welcomed the government U-turn to ensure exam students receive their grades, the grades their teachers predicted, but said the uncertainty and worry had been tough for youngsters. A-level and GCSE students will now be given grades estimated by their teachers rather than by an algorithm, after a change in direction from the government. It follows uproar after thousands of A-level results were downgraded by exams regulator Ofqual, which used a formula based on schools' prior grades. And while some students have now got the grades they deserve, they have sadly lost out on their first choice university due to the algorithm. Vice Chancellor of the University of Wolverhampton, Professor Jeff Layer, said, "While we welcome the change in direction by the government, throughout we have been clear that we want to bring certainty to young people. It is in the students' interests to consider the tough journey they have been on, and our role is to support them to fulfil their potential. We have always looked at each person as an individual. We believe that, given the current circumstances, this is the right thing to do for a generation that already faces enormous challenges. We will continue to honour all offers that we have made to applicants. If they choose to accept that offer, we will ensure that they are fully supported in their transition into higher education and make sure that they are equipped to succeed on their chosen course."
Closing more police stations across the West Midlands risks cutting off the link between officers and local communities, it has been claimed. 8 stations are set to be axed across the region as part of the West Midlands Police's latest cuts to its estate. More than 70 have already gone over the past decade, with the local police station increasingly becoming a thing of the past. There are calls for clarity on the plans as closures have been pushed back due to the pandemic. Police chiefs have blamed government cuts and the dwindling numbers of people using stations, but police say they still play a vital role in 21st century Britain.
Our final news roundup on its way, plus news from our local football clubs too. Sightloss News now then, and it's a blog with one of Beacon's employment advisors, Sharon, called Glaucoma and Eye Drops.
When I was diagnosed with glaucoma, my pressures in both my eyes were 80. I had a funny headache at the side of my head, had problems holding my head up, and kept my eyes closed. To be honest, I thought my right eye was going to explode out of my skull. Of course, I was violently sick due to the pain. Some people do not experience pain or vision disturbances. Glaucoma can be the silent enemy. For some, it runs in their family, so when they are checked, it's usually found, and treatments can be varied. For me, I had laser to both my irises, 4 holes in each. Don't worry, you can't see them. I was given drops to get the pressures down. Initially, a drip and drops, 3 different types every day. I've now moved down to 1 set of drops twice a day. I have poked myself in the eye with the dropper bottles and think over the first 3 months I swallowed more than I got in my eyes. But now I am a professional at eye drops. There was one thing I did notice on starting the drops. I began having some really weird and wild elusive dreams when I went to bed at night. They got so bad I ended up sleeping with a torch. I had previous experience of Charles Bonnet syndrome. In the past, after eye treatments and operations, you know when you think that you see something, but it's not really there. It's the brain interpreting what it thinks you see. Some people describe images as curtains, carpets, and wallpaper. They can be animals, small creatures, people. It can be a bit confusing and scary at times. You think you're losing your marbles. At night, I was seeing dragons on my ceiling in my bedroom, all flaming, beautiful, but confusing. I had some really bad dreams. I mentioned it as I was chatting to my glaucoma nurse. I must admit, I did feel a little bit embarrassed. That's when she told me that the drops have some quite harsh chemicals and can cause this. To stop it, I had to take them after tea and not before bed. It worked. I am now on one eye drop a day in each eye in the morning. I still take a torch to bed with me sometimes. I do have some quite weird dreams and end up calling out in the night. My son usually comes in and wakes me up. You're having a bad dream, Mum. Are you okay? I was just wondering, do you have any visions with your sight loss, whether it be through eye drops or Charles Bonnet syndrome? Please get in touch and share your experiences as they may help others with sight loss.
Thanks, Sharon. It's time for our final look at the local news now with Christine.
Midlands Air Ambulance have unveiled plans to make Cosford the home of a new multi-million pound headquarters. The life-saving charity, which provides critical pre-hospital emergency care through specially trained medics, has drawn up plans for its first dedicated headquarters on a site in Cosford. Under the proposals, a new headquarters would be built on land off Neachley Lane in Cosford and would be a base for two helicopters. If it gets the go-ahead, the charity says it also expects the new base, which would include a memorial and event space, would create 5 to 10 new jobs over the space of the next 3 years. Its other bases in Staffordshire and Worcestershire would remain, allowing it to reach emergencies in 6 counties across the Midlands. At Cosford, the charity currently operates out of what are effectively temporary-style buildings. It means that there is no dedicated training set up or areas to hold sensitive conversations with patients or grieving families. The project is currently at the pre-application stage with Shropshire Council, but a socially distanced pre-booked public consultation evening explaining the proposals is already planned at RAF Cosford Museum on October the 3rd and the 4th. Anyone wishing to attend can email info@midlandsairambulance.com.
The transformation of City of Wolverhampton College could soon hit another milestone following the unveiling of plans for a new technical centre. An application has been submitted to City of Wolverhampton College planners for a new engineering and motor vehicle studies building to be constructed at the college's Bilston's site on Wellington Road. This is part of an overhaul of the establishment's estate, which will see a new campus built and form part of the Wolverhampton City Learning Quarter and the sale of its existing main campus on Paget Road. Governors at the college said the courses that the purpose-built technical centre will host are not suitable for the new city centre location. If approved, the two-storey building at the Bilston site will feature workshops for engineers, motor vehicle studies and welding, while there will also be ICT classrooms and general teaching areas.
Spectators gathered in their masses outside to witness a Spitfire fly past honouring the heroes of the NHS. The aircraft, bearing the names of thousands of heroes of the coronavirus pandemic, flew over the West Midlands last week to pay tribute.
the former Second World War aircraft with Thank You NHS painted on the underside, was touring hospitals around the country while raising money for the NHS charities together. It flew past Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham and then New Cross Hospital in Wolverhampton, as well as Telford's Princess Royal Hospital and Ludlow Community Hospital. As well as over RAF Cosford, people have also been given the opportunity to nominate the name of a loved one to be written handwritten onto the plane.
Wolverhampton University is awarding honorary degrees and fellowships to people who have made a significant contribution to their field of expertise. This includes honouring key filmmakers, producers, screenwriters and presenters who have championed diversity in the arts as part of its 25-year celebration of deaf support and deaf studies. Among the people being recognised are two high-profile local people, artist Cold War Steve and sports broadcaster Jackie Oatley. Cold War Steve, also known as Christopher Spencer, is an artist from Birmingham and is recognised for his contribution to the arts, receiving a Doctor of Arts honorary degree. Jackie Oatley was the first female commentator on Match of the Day and was awarded an honorary degree in 2016 in recognition of her outstanding contribution to sports broadcasting as well as championing diversity in sport. She will be given the role of Pro-Chancellor, which is a role given to individuals who are highly regarded in their field with a close link to the university. Other honorary degrees will be presented to the likes of Lady Frances Sorrell, Dr. Simon Walford, Louis Neathling, Manjeet Kaur Kang, Reverend Rose Hudson Wilkins, and Susan Llewellyn. They will all receive their awards at a special ceremony in July 2021.
A busy nest of bees was saved from homelessness when some essential tree safety work took place in Wordsley last week. Qualified officers from the council's tree inspection team identified a hazardous tree on Marley Road in Wordsley as part of their routine inspection. The team spotted a bee's nest within the tree and recognised the importance of safeguarding the hive whilst making the tree itself safe. Working with a specialist contractor and Hagley and Stourbridge Beekeepers Association, the tree was sympathetically cut back to make it safe while retaining the part of the tree the bees have colonised, allowing them to keep their home. The remainder of the stem will also provide ecological and habitat value for the future. The team ordinarily deals with the inspection and care of the council's tree stock, primarily on highways and parks and open spaces. While they focus on the removal of pruning of dead, dying or dangerous trees in order to make spaces safe for residents, they also work to promote biodiversity and safeguard native wildlife. This includes the retention of dead trees and dead wood within trees in appropriate locations where public safety is not compromised, where it has a high wildlife value. To find out more about the work of Hagley and Stourbridge Beekeepers Association, visit www.hsbka.org.
Sport news to follow in just a little bit, but now it's time to get those quiz answers and look at this week in history. So it's over to Flashback Roger.
This is our flashback section, where we look back at some events from the weeks of the 23rd to the 29th of August in past years, and where you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that we set earlier. Born on August 23rd, 1754, Louis XVI of France, he was responsible for square handkerchiefs as a favour to Marie Antoinette. He decreed that all handkerchiefs must have this shape. Louis XVI was later beheaded by French revolutionaries. Well, perhaps they don't like square hankies, but who knows. August the 25th, in 1835, the Great Moon Hoax appeared in the first of six articles published in the New York newspaper The Sun. The articles described fantastic animals on the moon, including bison, goats, unicorns, bipedal, tailless beavers and the bat-like winged humanoids who built temples. These discoveries were supposedly made with an immense telescope of an entirely new principle. The hoax story greatly increased the sales of the Sun even after it was exposed as false. And if you think about it, conspiracy theories about the moon landings continue today, as many still think that man hasn't landed there. August 26, 1986, Lake Nyos, a crater lake on the edge of the active volcano in the northwest region of Cameroon, suddenly releases 100 million tons of carbon dioxide, suffocating people and animals within a 16 miles radius of the lake. A pocket of magma lies beneath the lake, and that leaks carbon dioxide into the water. The water can become supersaturated with carbon dioxide, and an event such as this, or an earthquake or landslide, can cause it to be released. Scientists are not sure what triggered this event. On August 27th, 1896, the world's shortest recorded war occurs when the Anglo-Zanzibar War is fought between the United Kingdom and the Zanzibar Sultanate. It lasted about 38 minutes. The British considered that the poisoning of pro-British Sultan Hamad bin Thuwani by Sultan Khalid was a cause for war, and sent an ultimatum to Khalid demanding that he leave the palace. But Khalid then called up his forces and barricaded the palace. The British began bombarding the palace in 9:02 and stopped at 09:40 hours after Khalid surrendered. August 27, 1883. The Indonesian volcanic island of Krakatoa explodes with a force of equivalent to 26 H-bombs. It discharged 5 cubic miles of volcanic matter. The ensuing eruptions and tsunamis killed over 36,000 people. Over 70% of the island and its surrounding archipelago were destroyed as it collapsed into a caldera. The explosions could be heard from 3,000 miles away. The eruption was one of the deadliest and most destructive volcanic events in recorded history. On the same day, but in 1955, the first copy of the Guinness Book of Records is bound. The book came about after Sir Hugh Beaver came involved in an argument over which was the first fastest game bird in Europe, the golden plover or the red grouse. Realising that it was impossible to confirm in reference books whether or not the golden plover was indeed Europe's fastest game bird, he figured there must be many other questions debated nightly in pubs, but there was no book in the world with which to settle his arguments. He then hired the twins Norris McWhirter and Ross McWhirter to compile such a book, and it became the Guinness Book of Records and was an instant success. On August 29, 1895, Eleanor Rigby was born. She was the English namesake of Beatles song, whose tombstone with the name Eleanor Rigby is in the graveyard of St Peter's Parish Church in Woolton, Liverpool. Paul McCartney and John Lennon spent time during their teenage years sunbathing in the graveyard, just a few yards away from Rigby's tombstone. Close by is another with the name of Mackenzie on it. The names Eleanor Rigby and Father Mackenzie were used in the Beatles hit song Eleanor Rigby, written primarily by McCartney. While McCartney claims he just made up the names for the song, he said that the coincidence could be a product of his subconscious. The graveyard, coincidentally, is also very close to where McCartney and Lennon first met.
We have a double header from Roger this week. He's back a little bit later on. I will run through the quiz answers at the end of this week's edition, so listen out for that. Now, is that weather changing? What's it looking like for the bank holiday then, Mina?
A bit cooler over the weekend, with temperatures picking up next week as we move into September. The sunrise and sunset times are 6:15 a.m. sunrise, 20:02 p.m. for the sunset. Now, Friday 21st of August, we start with light rain showers and a moderate breeze with a temperature of 14 degrees with low pollen and UV levels. Saturday 29th of August, we have sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees with medium UV levels. Moving on to Sunday 30th of August, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 17 degrees with medium UV levels again. Moving on to the bank holiday Monday 31st of August, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 17 degrees with low UV levels. As we move into September, Tuesday 1st of September, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 18 degrees with low UV levels. And Wednesday 2nd of September, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees with medium UV levels. And finally, Thursday 3rd of September, slightly warmer with sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. And we finish with medium UV levels. Enjoy the weather.
Thanks, Mina. I will. But it looks like I'm going to need my coat. News from my local football clubs now. And it's Ian.
The football fixtures have been announced for next season, with Wolves' first away game to Sheffield United on Monday the 14th of September with an 8 o'clock kick-off. West Bromwich Albion are at home to Leicester City on Saturday the 12th of September with a 3 p.m. kick-off. The first Black Country derby in 9 years is scheduled for the 16th of January at Molineux, with the return at the Hawthorns on May the 1st. Chairman Jeff Shee insists the COVID-19 outbreak has not changed Wolves' 10 to 20 year plan to become an elite team in the world. Clubs across the land have felt the effects of the pandemic, but Wolves did not furlough any staff, and Fosun's long-term aims remain the same. Boss Nuno Espirito Santo has called for reinforcements, saying after the Europa League quarter-final loss to Sevilla that there is no doubt fresh faces are required. She insists they are working to bring in quality, but also stresses they will take a measured approach and stick to what has worked in the past, the club tending to make signings in the £15 to £20 million bracket. He also said Wolves are now taking a more cautious approach over expanding Molineux, insisting it will avoid a financial dilemma. Fosun still planned to increase the capacity of Wolves' home towards 50,000 in the long term, but the aim is to extend and improve existing stands rather than demolishing and rebuilding them completely, looking to retain the ground's unique character. Wolves winger Adama Traore has been called up to the Spain squad for games against Germany and Ukraine. The 24-year-old could make his debut for them after also being called up in November before pulling out through injury. Wolves are reportedly not ruling out an exit for Traore, with a number of clubs linked. Reports suggest that the club could accept an offer of no less than £70 million. Wolves midfielder Morgan Gibbs-White is poised to join Swansea on a season-long loan. The 20-year-old is being allowed out to get more regular playing time after a campaign where the majority of his 16 appearances were as a substitute. Gibbs-White will be reunited with former England youth boss Steve Cooper at the Liberty Stadium, under whom he won the Under-17 World Cup 3 years ago. Elsewhere, midfielder Connor Ronan and striker Renat Dadashov have joined Grasshoppers Zurich on loan. Meanwhile, reported Wolves transfer target João Palhinha has been left out of Sporting Lisbon's pre-season trip to the Algarve. Palhinha, 25, has been heavily linked with Wolves. A host of championship clubs are battling it out to sign Wolves youngster Dion Sanderson. The 20-year-old impressed at Cardiff during the second half of last season, so much so that the Bluebirds want him back. Three other second-tier clubs are also understood to be interested. Albion target Shane Duffy has hinted his future will soon be resolved, with the club still in talks with Brighton over a move for the defender. Reports in Scotland suggested Albion had jumped ahead of Celtic in the race to land the 28-year-old. Gareth Barry has been released by Albion. The 39-year-old, the Premier League's record appearance holder, joined the Baggies from Everton in 2017 and in total made 52 appearances for the club. It is not yet known if he will now retire from football or if he will look to continue his long and prestigious career, which saw him win the Premier League and earn 53 caps for England. As well as Barry, goalkeeper Jonathan Bond and defender Lee Peltier have also become free agents after their deals with Albion expired. Oliver Burke looks likely to leave Albion this summer, with clubs in England, Spain, Germany and Turkey interested in signing the forward. The Scotsman remains the Baggies' record signing, having cost in the region of £15 million, when he joined from RB Leipzig in 2017. Albion are reportedly in talks with Sheffield United over a possible swap deal involving Callum Robinson and Oliver Burke. Robinson spent the second half of last season on loan with the Baggies, but efforts to bring him back on a permanent basis have so far been held up by the Blades demanding an £8 million fee. It is understood Robinson is keen to join Albion on a permanent basis, but also willing to stay and fight for his spot at Sheffield United if necessary, and determined to prove he is good enough for the Premier League.
Thanks, Ian. Now, did you know, as well as being our resident historian, Flashback Roger is not averse to turning his hand to poetry. Is there no end to Roger's talents?
Hello, everybody. This is Roger. I normally do the quiz, but this week I'm trying a few poems on you. These are ones that I've written, so I hope you enjoy them. I've called this one Brains versus Bites. Techno heads and techno bits, mobiles, iPads and Xbox bits, emails, text talk and all that stuff, selfies and video and some in the buff. Computers daily rule their lives. No need to think, no need to strive. Their screens say 2 plus 2 is 3, so it must be right. Yeah, don't you see? What can we know, us poor old men, who just worked with paper and with pen? Posted letters, how very quaint. Wrote with pencil, please don't faint. We listened hard to every tutor, and had no broadband nor computer. Had double maths some days at school. Did calcs with logarithms and slide rule. And when I think, and it's good to know, that the brain will work when the electric goes. This one's called It's Such an Effort. I've got myself a list of jobs, jobs that will not go away. I really should go make a start. I might go and start on one today. Now, the one I finished yesterday, I started off last week, but I had to knock it on the head because it gave my back a tweak. Never mind, it's done and dusted now, and I'm feeling pretty proud. I didn't get in too much mess, so I'm sitting on a cloud. Perhaps I shouldn't get so cocky, some folks do it every day. I don't suppose I should feel tremendous. I only made a cup of tea. I'm sure there's quite a few of us been in this position over the years. I'll call it Oh Joy. Are we nearly there yet? Kids call out from the back. Are we nearly there yet? Are we lost or still on track? Dad, will there be sunshine when we get down to the sea? Are we nearly there yet? I think I need a wee. Oh, are we nearly there now? The little one shouts, then cries. Then the two just start fighting and one gets poked right in the eye. Are we nearly there yet? Oh, Daddy, please be quick. I've ate up all my sweeties and I think I shall be sick. Are we nearly there yet? Yell my impatient little tribe. And I really wouldn't mind at all. We're still on our front drive. And another one called Bank Holiday Monday. It's Bank Holiday Monday. Let's go off to the sea and leave the housework far behind for a day and let's be free. We can have a nice cold ice cream or a jammy sticky bun, or lounge about in deck chairs soaking up the glorious sun. We can go and have a cup of tea and lovely fish and chips. Who cares about the calories and inches on the hips? We can watch the seagulls fighting over wrappers in the bins, chucking out the papers and emptying cola tins. We could look at all the couples, strolling, smiling hand in hand, and laugh with all the families all playing in the sand. We could have seen all this, I'm sure, and whiled away the day, if only we had got there and not stuck on the motorway. Well, I hope you've enjoyed that lot. I've enjoyed reading them. Might send you another few soon. But for now, it's Roger saying bye for now. Ta-ra a bit.
Thanks, Roger. And if you have a poem you would like to read or would like to hear read out, then please send it in to us. Contact details coming up at the end of this week's edition. Now, that quiz. It's time for the answers now with Mina.
I will, Simon. So, what happened on This Week in History? Let's go through the answers. Question one. What shape of handkerchiefs were the favourite of Marie Antoinette? She preferred square ones. Question two. In what year was it published that there were wonderful animals living on the moon? The answer here is 1835 in the Great Moon Hoax, published in the New York Sun. Question three. In 1986, a lake in Cameroon released tons of carbon dioxide. What was the name of that lake? The answer is Lake Nyos. Question four. How long did the shortest war on record last? And the answer here is 38 minutes. Question five. In what year was the Guinness Book of Records first published? The answer here is 1955. And finally, question six. Where in Liverpool can you see the headstone of Eleanor Rigby, whose namesake was made famous by the Beatles? The answer here is St. Peter's Parish Church in Woolton. Hands up who got them all right. Okay, hands up if you got any of them right. Well, that's good enough. Well done. Another flashback on This Week in History quiz next week. But now, are you ready to finish this week's edition with a music quiz? Simon?
Well, I'm not, Mina. So are you ready to finish this week's edition with a music quiz then, Pete?
I am, Simon. But is everyone else? So, fingers on buzzers, no conferring. Here we go. Question number one. In 1965, which Welsh legend had his first number one with It's Not Unusual? So in 1965, which Welsh legend had his first number one with It's Not Unusual? Question number one. Question number two. Led by Judith Durham, which group took a morning town ride to number two in 1966? So which group took a morning town ride to number two in 1966, led by Judith Durham? Question two. And finally, question three. Who took Puppet on a String to number one in 1967? Who took Puppet on a String to number one in 1967? Thank you to Andy Colston for sending them in. We'll give you the answers next week. Is that it, Simon?
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!